Henry Greenfield, appellant Christina Greenfield, appearing pro se. Jonathan Howland, appearing for appellees Eric and Rosalind Wormlinger.
Okay, Ms. Greenfield, you have both your audio and your video muted. Could you turn on your camera and your microphone, please? Okay, we can see you now. We can't hear you yet.
Hi, I'm on my phone. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Okay, good. All right. So would you like save part of your 15 minutes to speak after Mr. Howland does?
I would. About 4 minutes.
4 minutes. Okay. Go ahead, please.
So thank you for allowing me to speak in front of all three of you today. I really appreciate that fact. The defendants would love to have you throughout this case by stating that I have no standing. And I obviously disagree to that. Even if there's a dollar left as a surplus in my account, that still gives me standing. And according to my figures, there's a substantial amount that's left owing. And there'd be more owing surplus if the Wormlinger claim had been properly adjudicated by the trustee. And I have disagreed and objected to the Wormlinger claim since January of 2020. And it's been a hard road. The trustee has not followed any of my attempts to try to get this claim adjudicated correctly and the proper amount. The Wormlingers were under Idaho law in order to submit their claim properly under IRCP 10-1110 and IRCP 10-1111, and they missed their deadline. And according to Idaho law, that means
which deadline did they miss? You need a flow chart to figure out the judgments and the timelines and things here. But I thought everyone agreed that they timely renewed the first original judgment and got an order. Then there's a lag between the entry of that renewing judgment and the recording of that. So when you say that they failed, what exactly are you saying that they failed to do?
In November 2017, the Wormlinger submitted a renewal to the court for $103,000. That was their last and only renewal that they asked for from the court. They have never asked for a renewal of $261,000+. They missed the deadline.
Are they have to do that now? Isn't there a 10-year deadline now?
No, they're under the 5-year deadline.
Even for the second amended judgment?
Yes. For any amended judgments, they fell under the 5-year deadline.
Why is that?
Because the rules didn't change until after the effect. The rules,
but the judgment wasn't entered. That second amended judgment wasn't entered until after the rule did change. So if you're saying each judgment is its own standalone, the last two judgments were entered after the July 2015 change.
From what I understood, and I've met with counsel on this before, I did have counsel prior to me being a pro se litigant, and it was understood that they had to follow the rule, the 5-year rule, that they had to follow the judgments, which would have meant they would have had to do a renewal by March 26th of 2018 in order to renew the entire judgment.
You understand that you haven't shown your work, essentially, going back to elementary school. By meeting with counsel and getting that, that doesn't tell us much, because it sounds like you are saying that all the judgments need to be renewed, but the last two weren't even entered until after the change. And then, the Wormlingers did renew the earliest one. So between those two situations, I mean, they're owed something, right?
No, there's one judgment they renewed for $103,000. They've never renewed or attempted to renew any other amounts. There's only one renewed for $103,000 that the judge approved back in 2017. They had ample opportunity. I didn't file for bankruptcy until 2019. They had ample opportunity to follow through, and if they were going to submit any other renewals, to do that, and they never did. So they missed their deadline. And IRCP 10-110 and 1111 is very clear that they only have a certain time to do that, or they lose that judgment. And then the other effect too is they have to record those judgments timely on my property for it to be a secured loan.
Where are you getting that, ma'am? Where is it in the statute that they have to record something after renewal?
It has to be recorded. This was from my attorney that they had to record it.
Because the Idaho Supreme Court seems to say that you don't have to record initially. So why would you have to record? I mean, you're renewing the judgment, not necessarily the lien. So why? I mean, what does it matter if they record or when they record? Because they did eventually record.
Yeah, but past the statute, they only have five years.
But they renewed this. They renewed the judgment, though. That's the problem here. I mean, they renewed even under yours. They renewed the 103, so that judgment remained. And it's just like a judgment you get from the lawsuit. You may win and get your judgment, and if you don't record, the judgment doesn't go away. You can record it whenever.
Well, it's my understanding that judgments fall off, that most states have a five-year limit that judgments fall off. Idaho happens to be one where you can renew your judgment back in the day every 5 years, and then they changed it in 2016 to every 10 years. And so those judgments don't stay on forever. There's proper procedures that litigants and judgment holders have to follow. And Wernlingers did not follow that. They did not properly renew the full amount. And then they turn in a claim for $103,000 to the bankruptcy court that they later changed to $261,000+. And then their attorney states that only $170,000 is secured, $170,000. And in the end, after they sold my house, I found out through word of mouth that they got the full amount for $261,000, which has still yet to be, I haven't seen a final report from the trustee that shows me who was paid and what was paid. And so
I believe the final report was filed.
No, there's no final report that's been filed. There's no final report. And there's two creditors outstanding, Sheely and Greenfield, that haven't received a dime. And they were huge, had huge amounts owed to them.
Well, they wouldn't receive a dime, ma'am. And ma'am, they wouldn't receive a dime until the final distribution, which comes after the final report. So they wouldn't, only the secured creditors, and I understand that's the point you're trying to make here, is that the Wernlingers weren't. But I mean, that's why, obviously the other Greenfields are the lion's share of the unsecureds, but they're not going to get paid until the end of the case.
Yeah, and my argument was that the Wernlingers had unsecured claims that should have been in the same category as the other two creditors, which obviously one is my ex-husband and one is my daughter, who had a substantial amount of money into my property that they should have been awarded. And for the Wernlingers to receive a full amount that they pulled out of air without substantiating any of their claim, which is I repeatedly asked the trustee, please look into this and see if it's valid claim. Check it out. See if it's valid. Where are they getting their numbers? And it's hard to be ignored through the bankruptcy and told I have no rights, I have no standing, you know, sit in the corner, mind my own business, while my $500,000 in assets is distributed to a claim that really is undeserving of $261,000. And there would have been plenty of money to pay my two, you know, the Sheely and Greenfield. And then there was only approximately five claims, I believe. One was a hospital for around $6,000. One was a Verizon bill for like $90. And then the three main creditors that came with the big ones were Greenfield, Sheely, and Wernlinger. And it's just been exhausting trying to get the trustee to listen to me, which is his fiduciary responsibility, to hear what I have to say and at least validate the claims. And it's just been a nightmare to try to get that done. And I should also point out, opposing counsel, the trustee didn't even respond with a brief, and opposing counsel has refused to even address these facts. And basically his 1.5-page brief just discusses the fact that I have no standing. And I think that's up for question, because the Wernlinger claim, if it's proven that doesn't have the standing that they say they do for $261,000. There's a lot of money left over.
Well, but again, this goes to my problem at the beginning with the flow chart is that it seems that you know, in your brief, you're agreeing that there's a $103,000 claim, right? That has to be, you don't believe it's $261,000 secured, but even you seem to concede that there's a $103,000 unsecured claim in there. Is that correct?
I would say that the $103,000 would be an unsecured claim and nothing above that.
Why wouldn't they get interest on the
$103,000? Well, plus interest, of course.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, and according to their claim, that's about 36, so it's 136. And with that, I mean, the calculation, I'm sure Mr. Holland's going to get into this. I don't mean to go into your time much, but I think he's going to tell us there's about 60,000 short, even with 103.
Well, Mr. Holland didn't address any of that for me to respond to in his brief. He simply ignored all of that and just applied the standing.
I mean, that really is the standing under whatever term you want to use it.
But. Yeah, and so basically he gave no argument as to the Wurmlinger claims in his brief. He's given absolutely no opinion on it. He just, like I said, I'm looking at his brief now, it's a page and a half, and even the first page he doesn't even address the debtor correctly. It was like it was just kind of a last minute thing to just respond. Because on the first page, he says, as the appellate, Ms. Wurmlinger. He doesn't even address it at Greenfield. It just seems like it was just kind of a last second. He's going to get a quick brief in.
You're at the four-minute mark now. So if you want to reserve your time, this would be the time to stop. But if you want to keep going and reserve less, that's fine, too. It's totally up to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll save that time.
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Thank you. Mr. Holland, go ahead, please.
Thank you. May it please the court. Again, to follow up to Ms. Greenfield's comments to the court, it is her burden as the appellant to demonstrate that Judge Hillen's well-reasoned opinion was in error. And due to the lack of her reasoned argument, felt it wasn't appropriate or needed to fully respond to her appeal, one that was largely driven to by my client's consideration of cost. Despite Ms. Greenfield's representations, there is not a subrogated insurer that's paying for my client's legal fees in this case. They are self-paying for their legal fees. And so they've been involved in litigation with Mrs. Greenfield for 17 years now, in which she has continuously tried to relitigate and collaterally attack the jury's decision, as well as the Idaho Supreme Court's final decision at every step of the way. And so we find ourselves here again in the form of an appeal with Ms. Greenfield unsatisfied with yet another decision where she tried to collaterally attack a decision that was rendered years ago in the form of a order renewing a judgment. She has failed to demonstrate a legal basis for this court to reverse Judge Hillen's decision in this regard. Judge Spraker, I think you hit the nail on the head here, is that the initial judgment that was issued following the jury trial in 2013 for $103,000 was timely renewed. The issue here was whether that order renewing the judgment was timely recorded. There is no obligation under Idaho law to record a judgment. That is a decision to be made by judgment creditors, whether they want to try to perfect a judgment lien against real property owned by the judgment debtor. In this case, my clients did that, but there was a period in which they did not, there was a 5-year period between the recording of the initial judgment and the order renewing the judgment. All that affects is the priority of that judgment lien in this case. And priority really isn't an issue in this case, because the only other lien creditor is the secured lender, Bank of America, which had a deed of trust securing a promissory note with a balance of approximately $127,000. So the priority of my client's judgment really wasn't an issue, and it didn't impact whether it was a secured creditor or not. At the end of the day, whether their judgment lien relates back to 2013 or 2018 doesn't matter. They have a judgment lien. They're a secured creditor in this case. And Ms. Greenfield has never demonstrated at any step that my clients are not entitled to to the amount that was detailed in my client's proof of claim. Ms. Greenfield has now asserted that my clients are only entitled to at most $103,000. I would direct this court that Ms. Greenfield did file during her bankruptcy an amended schedule in which she averred under penalty of perjury that my client's claim was $224,456.34. And in doing so, she noted that claim was not contingent, contested, or unliquidated. And so now we have Ms. Greenfield trying to assert that my client's lien was substantially less than the amount sought in the proof of claim. Back to Ms. Greenfield's arguments that somehow my clients, because they failed to respond, should be at fault. It's Ms. Greenfield's burden as the appellant in this case to demonstrate error, irreversible error, mind you. And it goes back to the old adage is that sometimes when you respond to an argument, you lend credence to that argument. Here we have a litigious, I would almost liken Ms. Greenfield to a vexatious litigant. This is some of the most vexatious litigation I've ever been involved in. And she will not let this dispute that she self-initiated back in 2005, she will not let this dispute go. And she's never been happy with the decisions she's received, whether that's from local law enforcement, the Homeowners Association, the City of Post Falls, the Idaho District Court, the jury, the Idaho Supreme Court, Judge Hillen. She's never been happy with any of the decisions she's received with regard to her dispute with my clients. And here we find ourselves once again, Ms. Greenfield's unsatisfied with an outcome that she views that didn't go her way and is attempting to relitigate the past. So for the sake of beating a dead horse, I rest.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Greenfield, we'll reset the clock. You've got a little under 4 minutes, I think. Yeah, a little under 4 minutes, so please go ahead.
So Mr. Hallin just exaggerated. None of this is on the record that he gave you in any of his response to you. He exaggerated a great deal. He made up a bunch of stories, which sounds good to you guys, but he cannot substantiate anything he just said. This is not a 17-year-old court battle. There was after he illegally accused me of a felony for charging 10, for cutting, trimming down 10 arborvitae that was eventually dismissed, I filed a lawsuit to compensate me for attorney's fees against him. It's hard to be homeless now at 64 because of 10 bushes. So of course I'm upset by it. Who wouldn't be? Who wants to be homeless at 64 and lose their home because of 10 bushes? Mr. Hallin did not have any facts that have been substantiated. Like I said, he just made up a bunch of stuff. The Wurmlingers did not pay their attorney during the whole court process until they hired Hallin because their insurance company paid the whole bill, that other additional $168,000 plus interest. The Wurmlingers only went to the court for renewal for $103,000. They did not go after the full amount for $261,000, which they had ample opportunity. As Mr. Hallin stated, every time the Wurmlingers went for a renewal since 2013, they filed several renewals on the $103,000. They would immediately go down to the court, to the records department, and record that renewal judgment from the judge within the 30-day time period. I do not have IRCP 10 in front of me right now to tell you whether or not it's in there. I've met with attorneys, I've been given advice, and I was told that that has to be recorded in Idaho, Kootenai County, for it to become a secured loan on your property. And if it's not properly done, they lose that option and it becomes an unsecured loan, or excuse me, lien. And which follows into the category that I said earlier, would be unsecured along with Sheely and the other Greenfield, so that all three were properly adjudicated by the trustee. But as I said, I've been ignored. They're not following Idaho law. The court did not follow Idaho law. The trustee did not follow his fiduciary duty to validate their claim. And like I said, when I do my math, according to what I've kind of heard through off and on without having a final, or what's it called, a final from the trustee given to the court yet, my total still shows over 30 some thousand that's left over. And that's including paying the Wurmlingers their fee. So I don't, that, and like I said, if there's a dollar left, that gives me standing. That's a surplus, even if it's a dollar. Mm-hmm. And they had plenty of time to Mr. Howland had plenty of time to respond to this. I've asked for several months to deal with this because I had to deal with moving out of my home and being out on the streets and everything else. It's been a nightmare. And Mr. Howland did not, everything he said was not in his brief. He made up a bunch of stuff because it sounds good. He's trying to obviously make me look like the bad guy, and that's not the case. And it's not a vexatious litigant on one case that I've been constantly pursuing a claim. He's misusing that term as well. That's not fair. So anyway, I rest. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you both for your arguments. We appreciate it. We'll take the matter under submission and provide a written decision in due course. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And that concludes the calendar. So court is in recess.